Salutations, everyone. Once again, this is ATTGS. This is the operator for this Lima on Sunday. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we all get together, hopefully teach each other, learn from each other, and entertained by each other. So I thank everyone who showed up once again this Sunday. Let me try and do it all over again. Let me jump for a second, and then I will give you the usual link. Okay. If you can reach me via the radio, then you can reach me via email. This would be either for what we used to call mailbag questions. So if there are questions that you aren't available to ask during the technical net, so you email them to me, and we try and answer them, and you either listen on our internet audio stream or listen on an archived audio file. Other reasons to email me is if you have a topic for discussion, if something happens in the news and you happen to know a great deal about the technical aspects and want to share it, or if you have a technical subject that you would like to be part of a conversation, or in some cases it's a person who doesn't know anything about the subject but is interested and wants to hear other people talk about it. So that's the reason. If you have a puzzle to share, we're always looking for technical puzzles, brain scratchers, if you will, something that's not able to be answered by Googling it. Or even better, if you Google the question, you get the wrong answer. Always love those types of puzzles. Or if you want me to tap all on the shoulder, WS2N, about a NASA space-related story, to give his opinion, you could either contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. Or you can contact me. My email address for this is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Let me drop again. I'll continue with the link. Okay. I always put together a bunch of cut-and-paste articles, YouTube, interesting articles that I see throughout the week. I put it on a link page. It's called Roy's Link. You get there by typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. It's available 24/7, so any old time that you're interested, feel free to type it in and click the links and read the articles. We have a chat room available. Sometimes it's busy. Lately it's been kind of quiet, but if you want to try it out, type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. As I mentioned earlier, we do offer an internet audio stream of the technical net. We used to use it primarily for the technical net, but some people ask me to keep it live for the rest of the week, so we do that. So if you are out of radio range for the Glen Oaks repeater, but you still want to hear what's going on there, if you type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, it'll bring you an audio stream. And as always, I like to remind people that MikeAC2NJI has a great archive site called amateurradio.tv. It has archives of these technical nets going as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who either moved away from the area or have become, unfortunately, silent keys. There's a lot of wisdom in those pages, so check it out. I'll be right back with what we got planned. We're going to ask people if they have any technical questions, subjects, or topics. I would prefer the first few questions to be amateur radio related. This is an amateur radio technical net, but we're open to discuss any aspect of science and technology, as those who've listened before know. I'll try my best, and if I can't supply any good answers, I'll hopefully be able to supply some resources to look up good answers. That'll take us about 10:15, hopefully, in which call WS2N will present the SpaceNet report until about 11 o'clock, and I will return to tie a bow on it and wish you well. So the laws of physics, the repeater, and my own little shack work the way they're supposed to, that's the plan. So with that in mind, if anyone out there has any questions or topics or comments for tonight, please hit that push-to-talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
WS2N with the battery topic.
Okay, Paul. Paul recognized. Hopefully we'll get a few more people. Today is Father's Day, so I'm sure a lot of you fathers are celebrating with your family. I hope you'll have time for our little vesicle mess tonight. So, once again, anyone else out there with any questions, comments, or topics, give me your first name and your call sign.
Number 2, Zulu Charlie, is on the radio?
Yes, November 2, Zulu Charlie. You're full quieting, but your audio is rather low.
Okay, Roy, thank you, and good evening. Wait for a few minutes, and then I'll be back. Thank you. I said I was trying to get the mic hooked up here on echoing, so thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Did you have a question for tonight, or you just wanted to check that you were coming through?
Right now, I just wanted to check if I was coming through. I just want to finish something up, and I may pop in as the conversation progresses.
Okay, very well. Hopefully that'll happen. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight? Give me your first name and your call sign.
Ryan, Kilo Zero, Bravo, Bravo.
Yes, Ryan. Ryan sent me a mailbag question. It'll fit on the esoteric side, but we'll discuss it if that's your wish. You kind of answered it for yourself, but still we can go into some aspects of it. So I will put you on the list. Okay, well, hopefully as time goes on, there'll be other entries. I hope it isn't a very quiet Father's Day today. Paul, you're up first. What's the battery question?
I don't know if you saw this article. This thing came out of The Guardian. But they were talking about getting a new kind of chemical, and instead of the lithium ion process, they plan on getting a chemical out of the shells of crabs and lobsters. Apparently, they have a chemical inside the shell that they could use for batteries instead of lithium ion. And the University of Maryland tested it, and they got, like, I don't know, 400 times the results of a regular battery. They find that lithium ion, you know, once you throw them away, it takes, you know, thousands of years before they degrade, where these things will degrade in a couple of months. So, but they're essentially biodegradable. I don't see them be able to, you know, I don't see how they can mass produce this thing. What would be interesting, though, is if they could find that, you know, figure out the chemical and then synthesize it, you know, and then mass produce that. The article didn't say anything about that, but interesting topic. I don't know if you came across that. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I mean, back when we used to do the Science Talk segment, at least every other week I was doing a discussion of some esoteric battery technology. That's the holy grail. If someone could figure out to increase the energy capacity of batteries, it would change the whole picture of modern technology. Whereas solid state advances have been exponential, batteries have been anything but. So the bottleneck for really advanced technology tended to be battery technology. It goes very slowly and spurt, and it's you know, people have kind of been jaded already. I've dropped this up. Yeah, so I saw the article. Unfortunately, The Guardian is the worst place you want to get your science advice from. It's kind of like the Post in New York. So you keep that in mind. They sort of know what it is. It's called chitosan. They're mineralized proteins that are produced by crustaceans. So they're living material, and that's why they decay, because they're digestible by other living organisms. So that's a plus, but it's also a minus. I mean, with you, what happens if your battery gets attacked by something that eats that stuff? And that's not a good thing either. So people know about it. It probably works with the same underlying principle as graphene that I've been mentioning for years, especially again on the Science Talk. If you can increase the surface area of these electrodes, you can increase the energy density. The problem is doing it in a stable, cost-effective way. Graphene allows you to do it, but graphene for production purposes is ridiculously expensive. Also, you have to worry about, you know, whether recycles maintain the same structure or destroy the structure. So that's another, the stability, both pressure, temperature, and time. In the case of protein-like materials, whether bacteria can get into it and then corrode it biologically. So it's a real thing. It's early on, and it's got a lot of problems. And my guess is that other avenues of battery technology will probably be more successful over time.
Okay, you know, I read this earlier today, but I didn't get a chance to see if it was on any other websites. You know, I got Bible Father's Day, and I was going to send it to you, but I figured I'll send it to you next week. But it looks like you've already read it, so I don't have to send it to you. I remember graphene topics used to talk about, you know. I keep a record of all these. That was the graphene topics were over 200 weeks ago. it was a long time ago, but they're still working on it after all these years. But I don't see a breakthrough with graphene yet, and I don't expect to see a breakthrough with this either. Although, you know, the University of Maryland, you know, that's what made me get it. You know, it's a reputable place, and they're testing it. So, we'll see. They got to come up with something. They've come a long way with the batteries over the years. You know, ever since lithium ion got made into the market, but you know, something else would be good. And if they could duplicate, or whatever it is, inside the crust, figure out how to duplicate that and mass produce it, that would be a step in the right direction. But my guess is that's quite difficult to do. Anyway, back to you, Roy. I'll be listening. WS2M.
Okay, Paul. By the way, it's not that new. I was able to Google while you were talking. There's an entry in Google from The Guardian that dated September of 2022. It was in The Guardian at least about 6 months ago or so. But like I said, there's a lot of interesting materials, whether it's sustainable, producible, viable. Is always a big question, and you got to understand that pretty much every university has chemistry or material sciences does a lot of research, and there's an agency of every university that promotes the research. So a lot of times you don't get these things coming out of the researchers themselves. They don't have press conferences. What you have is press releases from the administrative portion of the university kind of promoting their research. So most of the research that you get this way tends to be not ready for prime time. It's very early preliminary studies that almost always never really get anywhere except for some research papers, which are very useful for people with PhDs. You know, there's the old line, publish or perish. If you can't publish a couple of articles on a subject, you end up being in academic obscurity. So we'll keep an eye on this one. I keep an eye still, even though I don't do the Science Talk anymore. I have a lot of these same articles on my link page available for people to read by themselves rather than me reading them. But they're always working on new energy density technologies. Lithium as a battery component, they started to experiment on it about a century ago. They kind of knew that if they figured it out, it would be very useful because it's relatively lightweight but has high energy density. And it took them about 80, 90 years to figure out a safe way of using it. Now we have all kinds of different lithium-based batteries. We have lithium-ion, we have lithium-ion polymer, we have lithium-iron phosphate. I think I heard someone talk about lithium-ion sulfate. I'm not really familiar with that, but I got to look it up. But it's still lithium. You know, they could shine it up as such, but ultimately the energy density specs are pretty much similar. So we'll keep an eye on it, and if I hear anything, I'll let everyone know.
Okay. Yeah, I'm always worried about coming across another coal fusion topic. And that came out of a university, too, I think. I think that came out of Utah. You know, you never... I don't want to come across one of those and waste an hour talking about that on the net. That's for sure. But this looked okay. Anyway, back to you, Roy, and I'll be listening. WS2N.
AC2GS. Yeah, I mean, all these things initially come out of researchers, and sometimes it's a great breakthrough, and sometimes it doesn't really pan out, and sometimes it's lab error. I've mentioned before one of my favorite fake science. When I was a young person reading popular science, was a thing called polywater. People in a lab had thought they discovered a new form of water, a polymerized water molecule, because it had different characteristics, it had a different boiling point, and later on they figured out that it was just due to kind of dirty glassware that contaminated the water sample and changed its boiling point accordingly. But, you know, science always two steps forward, one step back. I don't think this is a lab error. I just don't quite know if they'll ever bring it out to be a productive, scalable product. You can't really, as far as I know, synthesize polysaccharides cheaply. So you'd have to get it from a bunch of crabs. And then, you know, where would you find all the crabs? But that's just one of 10 trillion different problems in taking a technology to a commercial end. Anyone with any comments about this or anything about batteries, feel free to ask or say. Yes, John.
Yeah, Roy, related to that, without taking the policy consideration, because I know what he's all over the spectrum on, but just push with the government, get them out there. I'm reading so many contradictory, whether power grids can handle. I know we've got a lot of smart guys. I just wanted to get a perspective on it. All these are the bulk of the sales. What's the real insight
is
whether the power
system. Okay, John. Yeah, we sort of discussed this before, but we could discuss it again. There's a lot of big problems with scaling up electric vehicles. Superficially, it sounds nice because you don't have internal combustion, you don't have an exhaust pipe, but you're kind of moving the problem to another place. Instead of the exhaust pipe, you're burning fossil fuels for the most part to get energy out of power generators, and then there's the loss of transmitting the power from the power generator to the charging sources, and then you need infrastructure, more charging sources, you need more generators to be built, and they can't be nuclear because everyone doesn't want a nuclear reactor anywhere near them.
So it's the chicken and the egg situation, but it's kind of always been a chicken and egg situation when automobiles first, internal combustion automobiles first came into being. There was not the built-in infrastructure for supplying the vast amounts of gasoline required. And usually the two streams kind of push each other up. You know, it's the old weird thing about pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, which is physically impossible. But there's a concept being that, you know, the chain of supply and demand kind of adjust each other. So you'd have to build more generators and more transmission lines and more charging. But you have even a bigger problem in that, where do you get all the material for the batteries? You know, we talked about lithium. Lithium also requires rare earth metals in addition to the lithium. And there's only so much of it mined and available. So it's going to be a problem unless battery technology changes, and it doesn't seem to be doing that anytime too soon. So the idea of eventually swapping over completely to batteries is probably not a good idea. Not that it's going to cause any terrible problem as time goes on and people kind of understand better the scarcity of the materials needed for the batteries. People will adjust their ideas, and what will happen is it will be a hybrid mix of electric vehicles and internal combustion vehicles until the next great tech goes pops into being.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Roy. You're welcome, John. If anyone else has any opinions about this, and in the past a lot of people had a lot of opinions, feel free to hit that push to talk button.
VDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
You know, on the electric vehicles, I'm just remembering during the days of Sandy, I was out for 2 weeks, and I know others were out equal or longer time. We were eventually able to get to the gas station, to get some gasoline, where some of the stations did have electric power. But now, if the grid was out or the electricity was out, nobody would be able to get around at all. I think one of the things that I've seen in the law for a living is to have some kind of movement where if the electricity goes down, the power companies are required to pay everybody for their paycheck for employment. That might put a different spin on it.
Well, I'm a little cynical. I don't think that would end up getting passed, and I'm so cynical that if it somehow did get passed, somehow they would use that cost to kind of increase their rates accordingly, because they're monopolies, and the whole idea is they're kind of guaranteed a profit thanks to the government. So, although it sounds nice, I don't know if it's politically practical as opposed to technologically practical. And that's the problem. Our infrastructure tends to assume that everything's going to keep going the way it's going, which occasionally it disappoints us by not doing so. And as you mentioned, a lot of gas stations do not have any means of pumping the gas out of their tanks without electrical power. So there might have been a few stations that had generators capable of dealing with it. The overall majority of gas stations, to my knowledge, did not. So you had sort of the same problem. There were some guys who lived dangerously and had cans of gasoline on reserve. Others cajoled and got some somewhere. But that's going to be a bigger problem. If the power's out, there's fundamentally, you know, I mean, I guess you could have a generator, and then, but then you using the same fossil fuel. I think, unfortunately, we are still in the rose-colored glasses age of electric vehicles. I think the people that are promoting it tend to be grifting a bit. They're promising all kinds of things that they have no reason to promise because they don't exist, and there's no indication that they will exist. Autopilot is a great idea, and eventually I'm sure it'll exist.
but probably not in this 10 to 20 year frame of reference. So I think, unfortunately, we're going to be technologically disillusioned by electric vehicles. And again, I think there'll be a percentage of electric vehicles on the road, but I don't think we're ever going to approach a majority of them. I'm assuming that eventually there'll be something else down the road. Not exactly what Back to the Future had a Mr. Fusion, I think, connected to a car. So it supplied fusion power to each car. Not quite sure that's going to happen either, but who knows?
Yeah, that was partially tongue-in-cheek. But, yeah, I noticed there seems to be some kind of driving force. Don't want to get conspiratorial about it, but it seems to be a tremendous push towards things electric and not thinking it through. Even it's about the gas stove, it's eliminating natural gas stoves. And if you look at that, the whole process makes the entire grid part of the inefficiency. They're burning something at the power stations to make heat from the turbines to generate electricity, and then you come to your home and turn that electricity back into heat, where everything in between is kind of the inefficiency. So just burn the stuff at your own location. So I don't know. There just seems to be quite a push towards putting everything electric.
Well, it depends who you're talking to. Certainly, companies who make money selling electric vehicles are going to promote electric vehicles up and down the wazoo. And there's a lot of people who think they're futurists and prophets of future technology who almost never really understand the underlying technology and take way too much for granted and believe way too much that people who are lying to them tell them. So, yeah, I think an unfortunate percentage of the hoopla is technically nonsense. And I think that, there's no irreversible aspect to this, so I think hopefully as time goes on and the number of electric vehicles starts to increase and the problems inherent in electric vehicles become more and more obvious to everyone, that there'll be some adjustment in the pie-in-the-sky sentiments that you read about. You got to understand that websites and newspapers function on curiosity and interest, not so much on whether it's real or imaginary. And the electric vehicle companies live or die by pushing the concept of electric vehicles, and most other automobile companies just want to make a profit. So if they feel that they could make more of a profit by selling electric vehicles until the populace loses the interest, then so be it. So it's a confluence of different forces, capitalism, hucksterism, optimism, and some people being technically idiots.
And where does governmental legislature come into all that?
Government legislature, unfortunately, is at the whim of politicians and what they can convince their voters to support. If you can convince enough people about something really foolish, then you can push it through and leave it for the next guy to undo it when everyone realizes what a disaster it was.
Yeah, but that's not really true. That doesn't mean that the populace is behind it. It only means that the legislative body is for it.
I don't think I said the populace. I said the voters. As long as you have enough people who are willing to vote for these people will try to accomplish whatever it takes to get reelected. So you don't need to convince 100% of the population or even 50% of the population. Unfortunately, the majority of people capable of voting don't bother to. So you just got to get the crazy base, and then you can do whatever you want. Because if you don't get the crazy base and you do something crazy, then you tend to be thrown out of office eventually, and the next guy reverses you. So, unfortunately, you don't need a majority. You just need a voter base strong enough to keep you in office.
W2BC?
Yes, Rich.
Has anyone seen a comparison of what it costs to run an electric car per year versus gas?
I have not, and I'm sure you'll share it with us. I think the murderous cost is the replacement of the rechargeable battery. Lithium ions do not last forever, and if and when you have to swap them out, talk about a bill. But please, educate us.
I was asking the question if anybody ever saw a comparison. I haven't. And so I have no idea how much more expensive they are to run right now. But for me to get into an electric car that has auto driving, I would have to be guaranteed nobody would hit me who doesn't have auto driving. And that's probably 20 years away at least.
Yeah, Rich, auto driving is at this point a farce. I have seen enough documented evidence that it is nowhere close to being a reality, and anyone that suggests, like someone who will remain nameless for a few seconds, who suggested that buying a Tesla guarantees you $30,000 a year by just using it as an automated taxi service and just the collecting the money, with not counting maintenance and what happens if someone trashes your autopiloted car that doesn't exist. But nevertheless, autopilot is just, at this point, a marketing scam. It is something that you promise people to raise the stock price of your company by 100-fold. And, you know, like gravity, everything that goes up must come down. Yes, John? Could you bring up your volume a bit, please?
Yeah, you're talking to me, Roy?
Yes.
This is about the best I could do. How is it now?
Yeah, this is fine.
Yeah, just to add in to what that other station was there, I apologize, I didn't catch his call sign before, talking about the legislative push. I know what he means, and I kind of resonate on his feelings there, because there seems to be, amazingly, there seems to be not only just a legislative push, but a global push on a global scale to go towards EVs. And what I find even more interesting lately, it's not just going to electric vehicles. There seems to be some sort of desire to get everybody on batteries for whatever reason, which, believe me, I don't see the logic in it. I don't think it's a good idea. And I don't know if anybody's come across this, but I was looking into buying new power tools, and I had a great discussion with the guy in Home Depot, and I followed up with other people. If you're looking for an AC drill or an AC store, get it now. In 2024, Black and Decker, Makita, just about all of them are no longer going to be making plug-in drills and stores. They're going to be solely batteries. And I can't believe that's just because of solely consumer demand.
Okay, then you kind of have to supply a good reason why the margins of profit would be higher with wireless battery charge power than the old fashioned. I get the general sense that I could be wrong, because I don't do any kind of consumer electronic demand, that most people tend to prefer battery powered wireless tools rather than the wired ones. It, you know, you don't trip over it, you don't have a particular length. The limitations in the past have been that the recharging technology and motor technology didn't really allow for the high enough voltages, for the high enough torques required for real heavy-duty tools. But over the last few years, with the growing of lithium technology, you know, they have 24-volt, 36-volt, where they're able to kind of demonstrate roughly the same torque equivalent. And so I think the companies believe that it's in their marketing interest to throw their resources completely with charged up tools as opposed to wired ones. Again, if anyone knows better, I'm just judging it by what I see as a guy on the street. I don't know about consumer research, but I'm sure these companies spend a significant amount of money doing tests with people and getting their opinions of what they like, what they don't like, what the demand is for, and what the demand is going down for and such. You know, again, unless you can figure out that it's so incredibly more profitable to buy, to sell a rechargeable tool as opposed to plug-in tools.
You may be right, but I just believe it's still, and I'm one of them, enough of a consumer base that wants the plug-in tool. I just believe erroneously that I don't get the same amount of power, and then something about the same duration. Sometimes I'm current and old, installing something that was all, continuing. But what do you think about also this by 2035? You can't buy or sell a fueled vehicle. And if you have it, you can keep it, but you can't sell it. And I heard now that they're doing such a, they're out of their schedule. They're talking about pushing that back to 2030. I mean, a very, very big desire, a big push.
I agree with you. It's become part of the zeitgeist, if you will, of the average guy. But again, I've been to this rodeo ride more than a few times before. We all remember the concept of incandescent bulbs. I think they said that they decided that they could easily be replaced with fluorescents at the time and LEDs a little bit later. So they passed laws that were going to slash all incandescent bulbs, I think around 2000. And then when it got anywhere close to it, they extended it 5 years and 5 more years and 5 more years. And then they extended to low power incandescent light bulbs. I don't know. It's 2023. I could still buy my oven light bulbs. They're still available. They haven't been stopped. So again, I don't think we should necessarily see these optimistic, in the case of these guys' opinion, these laws as coming to fruition. What can be rolled forward can be rolled back and can be discontinued. So being a betting man that I'm not, I would bet that they will roll it back when push comes to shove. Again, because of the inherent limitations in just the supply of battery materials. Unless we discover a brand new battery that you could grow on a tree, I don't see that we'll be able to supply the battery needs that 100% EV environment would require us to. And politicians and general public don't usually do math very well, but, you know, when they notice the problems are in front of them, they'll probably decide to change their mind to one degree or another, I think.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I'm going back to what Rich was talking about, comparing the usage of cars to a gas car. I haven't read that, but one time I did try to figure out the amount of electricity that would be needed if everybody decided to go with an electric car. And, you know, I looked up the average kilowatt hours, and they said for 100 miles it was roughly 40 kilowatt hours for 100 miles. So let's say your job is 50 miles away. So you're putting on 100 miles a day. So you figure 30, 40 kilowatt hours a day. That's roughly what, you know, the average house, you know, usually runs, they say kilowatt hours, but, you know, per day you might do about the same. Anyway, I thought about it before my calculator blew up, you know, from the numbers. It looked like it was about twice the amount of power that would be needed in America to supply all these electric cars. That means taking all these powerhouses that we have, Northport Powerhouse, Port Jefferson, Big Alice, you know, all the ones, you know, throughout the whole metropolitan area and throughout the country, and double them. I just think we would need like twice the amount of power that we're getting. I don't know if that's, you know, close to what we need, but, you know, it has to come from somewhere, Roy. So, you know, I did try to do that calculation a couple of years ago. Back to you, Roy.
ACCS. Well, yeah, that goes back to infrastructure. We simply don't have the infrastructure for a significant percentage of electric vehicles. But again, we didn't have the infrastructure when internal combustion engines first rolled around our roads. So this is kind of baked into all these concepts that over time you would have to increase and expand the infrastructure for both charging units and power generation capacity. The thing that might kind of suffer EVs is if the cost of getting per mile was significantly different. I don't think so. I think they're close enough in comparison once you have the electric generating capacity so that you're not paying an inordinately more amount of money to kind of charge up the car. The one big expense that's kind of hidden from electric vehicles until your battery's so bad is the incredible cost of labor and materials in swapping out your batteries. They're not like your remote control where there's a little pouch that's hidden off and you pull them out and plug them in. In the case of Tesla, a good portion of your chassis is built onto the battery. So you have to almost replace the chassis. And, of course, the batteries are very expensive. I still remember there was one guy whose car battery was out of warranty, and he needed it replaced. And I think they were going to charge him something like $17,000. And to just make a statement, he took his car and he drove it up a mountain and he let it fall down into the valley just to kind of say, screw you, which I don't know the economics of that decision, but still. So that's what bothers me a great deal, the gotcha at the very end. Right now, everyone with a Tesla has a relatively new shiny battery. What happens when they all screw up and they need a replacement? How many people are going to be happy-go-lucky to put out, and it's, I think, $17,000 now. It's probably going to go up in price over time. So those are the hidden costs that I think are going to scare a lot of people eventually.
Okay, I agree. Well, I'm going to hang on to my gas-powered cars as long as possible. That's for sure. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I mean, people have been trying different things. They try the hybrids. Some people like hybrids. Some people hate hybrids. I discovered recently, of all things, what is it called again? There's a ridiculously expensive car. It's a British car. The model is a P1. It goes for about $2.5 million, although I don't think they make them anymore. And it comes from a company that also manufactures race cars. And they actually have a hybrid battery, a lithium-ion, relatively low-capacity battery that will operate independent of the internal combustion engine for a couple of miles as a kind of emergency hybrid. So if you got $2.5 million to waste, you might be interested in that. Although I understand that the technology they use for those particular lithium-ion batteries was so terrible that a lot of the P1s ended up in the garage because it took them years to get replacements for those batteries. By the way, it's a McLaren.
Anyway.
anyway, again, when we did we used to do the science talk. There's a lot of things that capture the imagination of the average person, and for websites and newspapers are more than happy to promote it and present it, and you'll get all these semi-absurd products out there. Every so often, they'll sell glorified dehumidifiers as water catchers. The idea is you could go to any place that has no water supply, and if you somehow have a power supply, you can run these glorified dehumidifiers that will extract the humidity from the air and produce water, except, of course, you have to have a somewhat humid environment. If it's a very dry environment, it takes a lot of energy. Also, the technology tends to be kind of dirty, so then you have to start filtering it and doing all kinds of things. But there's a lot of things. There were rechargeable sidewalks. I'm sure people saw articles of people embedding solar cells into the road so that they can charge up wirelessly electric vehicles as they ride across the road. Incredibly impractical. But it touches something in people's imagination and their dreams of when they were little kids and wanted to fly. And, that's part of technology, too. For every, say, 100 things that are technical, that are announced, maybe 2 of them go into production and 1 of them is successful. So we usually forget about the ones that never ended up being successful because, no one comes back and says it didn't work. You just never hear about it again, like those rechargeable roads, highway roads. No one came by and said, that didn't work out. You just never hear about it again. So the next guy comes up with the same idea and tries to sell people to invest in it.
Roy, could you kick up the power on your transmitter? Roy, you're pretty noisy. You're about 50% noise here.
Okay, I'm at full power. Well, let me just ask, because a month or two ago, you kind of told me the same thing, but the same day, Paul told me that I sounded fine. So, Paul, was I very noisy before, and am I better now?
Not too bad, not for me to comment on it, but it was a little noisy. Now, it's much better, much, much better. W2BZ, Rich is coming in like dead full quieting, and you're not, but you made a big difference. It would be better if you could keep the power on. Whatever you just did. It's a lot better now, Roy.
Okay, very good. I don't know. The repeater is a very strange thing, and, whatever. I don't know. Sometimes I don't need this much power. Sometimes I do need this power. So, Rich, is this signal strength enough for you? It's 100% of what my transmitter can do.
You went from about 50% noise to about 15% noise, so it's much better. I was... And it may have to do with the links, I don't know, out here on the eastern end of Long Island, but I was having a hard time copying you.
Okay, I'll keep it at 100% for the rest of the night. Anyone with any other comments about batteries before we move on?
Sure, sometimes as night goes on, it improves. You'll probably be able to cut back on the power later.
Yeah, it's weird that way. When you first came on, it was noisy for the first few seconds as well. So I don't know. I think there's something a little wonky with the repeater.
K2 STP.
Well,
yes, Chris.
Delvin. Back to you, Roy.
Yes, Chris.
Hey, good evening. Hi, Roy. It's not the link. I can tell for Peters, as you know, it was noisy on both. Didn't matter. It is a little bit better now, and he's about right. It's about 15% now. It was like 50%. It was pretty bad earlier. As far as the batteries go, the thing about batteries I think no one ever talks about, besides getting them or making them, is what do we do with all this lithium when we're done? I know they can reutilize some of it, but lithium is one of the most toxic things on the planet. And what the hell are we going to do with all this lithium with billions and billions of pounds of it? It's some radiation material.
Well, you're going to be kind of stuck with recycling the overwhelming majority, no matter what the toxicity and the price of recycling. Because if you just put it in a landfill, you'll run out of the mineral to make more batteries. And also, it's the other things that go into modern day lithium batteries, rare earth metals. As well, so they're going to have to develop a really sophisticated recycling capability for all this stuff, and I think they'll just run out of the material or price themselves out of any kind of reasonable market before they get anywhere near 100% saturation of electric vehicles.
Yeah, exactly. And but I read somewhere the percentage that can be recycled, it's not very high. It's only like 40% or something, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but that's what I had in my head. It's you know, the sourcing the lithium, actually, they have a farm they're creating in outside of San Diego. I forgot the name of it. It was on 60 recently, and they think out of that one location they could cover 50 or 60% of America's if everyone was to drive a car. So I don't think the source of the lithium would be the problem, but yeah, I just don't see what they're going to do with it. But and the other thing, of course, you still have to make the electric, so you got to burn something to make the electric in the first place.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the chicken and the egg type of thing. It's just pushing the problem to some other place. Instead of having to deal with the exhaust coming out of your car, the exhaust is now coming out of generators, and you're going to need more of those generators, so you're going to have more exhaust. I guess the idea is if you centralize the source of the power, you might more efficiently deal with the pollution, although that's a problem. In addition to the metals that are... It's cheap to recycle 40%. As you bring the percentage up, the cost of recycling it declines.
We pushed you towards the end, Roy. I just switched over to Glen Oaks. It that got really noisy, but I heard most of it. But yeah, I agree with it. I don't know what the heck they're thinking anyway. K2SD thing.
Yeah, I just think the repeater is kind of having a bad day, personally. But we haven't really reached there. It's a bunch of optimistic people who don't know much about technology, marketers and investors, and you know, dreamers and such. And I sort of understand, but. It's not like you have to throw a switch and then it's irrevocable. So what will inevitably happen, there'll be course corrections. But again, in the same sort of way that incandescent light bulbs that were supposed to be all illegal by the year 2000, and there's still some varieties that are still around, you'll notice as time goes on, they'll push back the deadline, they'll change the percentages, and the great dream of 100% electric vehicles will just be a pleasant dream from some investment bankers and marketers in the future. But, you know, that's just my opinion. Okay, I just heard a burst of noise. I don't know, again, what the heck is going on with links and
beaters and such. I have no way to tell. So if something's going wonky all over the place, I'm sorry for people listening.
November 2, Zulu Charlie?
Yes, John.
Yeah, just to shift gears, I'm wondering if anybody's got any quick ideas on this. I've been experiencing a problem with the computer where if I have it on for a while, the internet is great. I have a direct Ethernet connection. And then after a while, after a couple of hours, the Ethernet connection just starts coming in and out, in and out, in and out. I switch over to Wi-Fi, bang, comes right back. And then that starts going in and out, in and out. So I thought it was the computer, and so maybe downloaded the Windows 10, figuring it might be that. And it's still with me. So I don't know if it's, like I said, a direct Ethernet connection. I don't know. I just had recently the cable company replace the router. I don't know. Any ideas on that? The only thing I get is a message saying change in server has been detected. That comes up sometimes.
That's it. Yes, Leslie?
Third, internet speed connection could be enough. So the question is, did you measure your speed and find out if you heard among other users from that particular connection?
You're very low, Leslie. Between the room, I think the audio, I really didn't get that.
Did you get it, Mr. Leslie?
Yes, I did, Wesley. John, what Wesley is suggesting that you might have a cable internet tends to be a shared resource so that a number of different customers are operating on the same pipeline. So if they're getting ultra-high definition Netflix movies, you know, in every room of their house, they might be drawing more of the bits than you are. I from the way that you describe it, it sounds like not a problem of download upload stream speed, but more a case of degradation of your connection, which I would think it would be more a problem either of your computer, your software, or your router. The way to figure out which is to use another device that's capable of utilizing your ISP. So in other words, if you have an iPad that works wireless, or you have another PC that plugs in through an Ethernet, and that connection is fine, then it's not your router. If you don't have anything like that, it could be your router, or like I said, it could be the operating system, the installation was a little fudged up, or it could be that the hardware is a little strange. It's somewhat less likely it's the hardware. If you're operating with both Wi-Fi and Ethernet using your computer, so it sort of depends. So the easiest thing is to try another computer device that utilizes your ISP connection and see if that times out. Because sometimes routers are lemons. You know, it might have a screwy power supply, and after a while it overheats and misbehaves.
I have another a question. Is it time-dependent? It means the time pass by and more customers, because it isn't time, connect to the same pipeline. It's one of all the answers. The other answer is programs in sleep or programs in active. Usually, if you have your computer set on start-up of so many programs, all of the programs are trying to be active instead of being sleep. And if you check in your start-up menu when you switch on the computer, you can switch off those programs from being active, only waking up when you need them. And that would eliminate a lot of load on your internet connection and direction.
Okay, I'll ask John to address. Certainly, if it's a certain time of the day that it fails, which might go along with what you're suggesting of the shared capacity being kind of sucked dry. I don't agree with you about things running in the background. I don't know about what you possibly have running in your background, but they usually, the least that they take up is upload and download. It's not like most people have a lot of software doing video.